TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Arctic amplification, climate change and global warming, new challenges from the top of the world. Professor Peter Wadhams. The major cause of today's sea level rise is the melting of the 2-mile-thick Greenland ice sheet. And that in turn is caused by the warming of the Arctic. The planet is now circled by satellites that measure ice thickness, temperature, methane emissions, and more. They show that the Arctic is heating up much faster than the rest of the planet. It seems counterintuitive at first, since the Arctic was recently so cold that some explorers and ships that dared go there were never seen again. None of them would have thought they needed a boat to get to the North Pole. However, today, the Arctic is no longer the refrigerator of the Earth, but instead may be the most dramatic expression of a dreaded tipping point or feedback loop in climate. Fossil fuel emissions caused the melting of the Arctic ice. Now the Arctic is accelerating global warming instead of cooling the planet because of the disappearance or thinning of the ice sheet in the Arctic summer. This ice sheet that covered the top of the world and touched the coastlines of Greenland, Canada, Alaska, and Siberia for 100,000 years has been rapidly shrinking during the Arctic summer, and that took only 30 years. And the Arctic winter is no longer cold enough to restore the ice to the former level. Professor Peter Wadhams is the UK's most experienced sea ice scientist and was director of the Scott Polar Institute in Cambridge from 1987 to 1992. He was professor of ocean physics at Cambridge from 1992 to 2015. He has made more than 50 expeditions to both polar regions. His most recent book is A Farewell to Ice. In this extraordinary comprehensive lecture that he gave in Milano, Italy, in May 2015, Wadhams lists 7 major areas in which the Arctic determines climate change. In the previous program by TUC Radio, Wadhams explained how the Arctic sea ice is shrinking and thinning, and I encourage you to go back to the website or podcast to listen to that again for free at TUCradio.org. Now you are about to hear his research results on the melting of the Greenland ice sheet. The multinational study on the recent discovery of methane releases from permafrost and shallow water, the link between sea ice loss and the extreme weather events we have already experienced, and the churning and deflections of 2 great global air and water currents, the jet stream and the thermohaline circulation. So now we are rejoining the lecture that Peter Wadhams gave in Milano, Italy. As we know, floating sea ice that melts does not affect sea level. However, melting ice on land does. Professor Peter Wadhams takes us to Greenland.
The retreat of sea ice allows warmer air to get into the Arctic, and that's having an impact on global sea levels. What we find is that in November, when the ice should be freezing up again, it's not freezing over yet. So there's still lots of open water north of Alaska and north of Siberia. It's more than 20 degrees warmer than it ought to be because there's still open water and there isn't any ice there yet. So the water is warming, and that's warming the air. The air masses in the Arctic in summer are now much warmer than they used to be. That includes the surface of the ice sheet covering Greenland. And if we look at the Greenland ice sheet, which is a huge mass of ice, 2 miles thick, it used to just get some melt on it around the edges in summer because the altitude was low, so the edges of the ice sheet would melt, the centre wouldn't. But in 2012, 97% of the ice sheet was covered with meltwater, so there was a much increased area of melt going on. So this meltwater ends up in the ocean. It melts on the surface of the Greenland ice sheet. It runs off, or it runs down through the ice sheet to the bedrock and then runs out to sea. And that's increasing the amount of water in the ocean, which means it's increasing global sea levels. Up until 2007, this IPCC, this Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, was making very modest predictions about how global sea level would rise the rest of this century. But as soon as they started to see the Greenland ice sheet melting, and it's also happening a little bit in the Antarctic, that's also melting, this is the new estimate of how much sea level rise there'll be by the end of this century, and it's already up above 1 meter. And if we think about what 1 meter of sea level rise is going to do, that's a pretty massive effect all over the world. Locally, for instance, that would be enough to overwhelm the Venice gates, the flood defences in Venice. All the holiday resorts along the Adriatic would be affected. In Western Europe, Holland and Eastern England would be affected. In Europe, it's bad, but it's much worse in poorer countries like Bangladesh, where you would have very severe increase in the numbers of flood disasters. And in America, you'd have to abandon certain cities like Miami and New Orleans would just have to be abandoned. So this estimate of 1 meter of sea level rise this century is a very, very serious business. You get more and more flood disasters in the Bay of Bengal, eastern China, where these flood disasters kill hundreds of thousands of people. It's not like something in Europe that would only kill a few people. So this is a very serious effect that's coming along and is happening now, being caused mainly by the loss of ice from the Greenland ice sheet, and that's being caused mainly by the warming of the Arctic Ocean and the loss of sea ice. So the next effect in the story of doom is the loss of snow. So the snow line retreat is enhancing the albedo feedback. This area in the Northern Hemisphere is a departure from the norm. You used to, of course, have a lot of snow in everywhere, including Europe, in winter, but certainly the whole of the north of Canada and the north of Siberia would be snow-covered right through the winter into the summer. But now if you look in June, you find areas are snow-free in June. And the decrease in area of snow in June, which is when there's most solar radiation, is now reached 6 million square kilometres compared to the average back in the 1970s. Now, 6 million square kilometres is about the area of ice that there is in the Arctic Ocean. So the retreat of the snow in early summer is as great as the retreat of the sea ice. And it has the same effect on albedo. If the snow disappears, you're left with land, you're left with forest, tundra, dark stuff, which absorbs more solar radiation. So it's exactly the same effect. It's reducing the average albedo of the planet. And so really, the Arctic is adding about a half to the direct effect of adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. So we add carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, we think we're doing something to the planet, we are, but whatever we're doing directly from the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere, we're increasing that by 50% by the fact that warming is causing the sea ice to retreat and it's causing the snow line to retreat. Now, another really serious threat, which we're studying at the moment with a European research program, and it's the fact that we might have a great outburst of methane coming from the seabed. When the sea ice retreats in the Arctic, it's retreating in the summer just to the centre of the Arctic. Now, the centre of the Arctic is very deep water. It's a proper ocean, 4,000 or 5,000 metres deep. But it's retreating away from the shoreline and the coastal regions of the Arctic are actually very shallow water. This water is less than 100 meters deep. So in the Barents Sea, the Kara Sea, the Laptev Sea, the East Siberian Sea, all the seas north of Siberia, the water is very, very shallow, 50 to 100 meters water depth. And until recently, that was still covered with ice in the summer. But as soon as it retreats, you have this area which is now ice-free in summer and very shallow, so it can absorb solar radiation and the whole water mass can warm up. And we've seen that happen. This is 2007, Alaska, Siberia. The ice used to fill the whole of this area in summer, and the water warmed up to 5 degrees, more than 5 degrees centigrade. Now, that doesn't seem very warm, but it is, because it used to be down at freezing point, even in the summer. You warm it up to 5 degrees, and that warm water reaches down to the seabed and starts melting the frozen sediments on the seabed, which is called offshore permafrost. It's permafrost on land, which extends out to sea. Permafrost is where the soil is actually frozen. And so you're melting offshore permafrost by warming the offshore waters in summer because they're now ice-free. So it's an entirely new effect that didn't happen until about 10 years ago. So going up there in summer, you now find this ice-free area is releasing methane bubbles. And first of all, the methane was detected dissolved in the water. But then it started to appear actually bubbling out of the sea. This is a Russian group that's working with us, and this is what they found. The sediment at the bottom has melted, the permafrost has melted, and underneath the permafrost there's a massive amount of methane in those sediments in the form of a solid substance called methane hydrate. And the methane hydrate disintegrates when you release the pressure by melting the permafrost, and it comes out. And these are some sonar images of the methane actually coming out in plumes of methane bubbles, just hundreds of them, and forming a kind of whole curtain of methane bubbles coming up to the surface and going out into the atmosphere, which is increasing global warming. And each year that they go out there, there's more of this. There's more methane bubbles. There's more a bigger area where this is happening. So what's it doing to the planet? Well, at the moment, methane levels in the global atmosphere have started to rise again. They seem to have reached a kind of flat limit. Nobody quite knew why they'd stopped rising, but they did stop rising in about the year 2000, and we had nearly a decade of steady methane levels. Two German methane measuring stations showed levels starting to rise again about 2008, and these are methane levels measured throughout the atmosphere by a couple of satellites that can sense the level of methane in the atmosphere. And there's a lot more methane in the Arctic atmosphere in the later satellite pictures than the earlier ones. So it does look as if the methane that's coming up offshore in off Siberia is actually contributing to a methane increase globally. Methane, of course, spreads all around the atmosphere very fast, so it's hard to tell where it comes from. This is a global map of methane from a satellite, and we can see there's more methane in the northern hemisphere than the southern hemisphere. The levels are about 10% higher in the northern hemisphere, and it suggests that there's an increased and enhanced source of methane somewhere in the northern hemisphere, and so we think that might be the Arctic. In Cambridge, we modelled what would happen if all the methane that's trapped in these sediments came out very quickly. That may not happen. That would be a worst case, would be that the permafrost melted so fast that all the methane trapped in it was released quickly. But if it were, then it would cause an increase in global warming by about 0.6 of a degree, which means we're doubling the amount of warming that the Earth has received just within a few years. So it would be a real disaster. You know, it's like going into debt and then taking on even more debt. You just don't want to do that. So we think that the threat of a methane outbreak will be to make global warming worse very quickly. And so we hope it doesn't happen, of course. And then we estimated what the costs of this would be. We're working with an economist who works with the model that's used was used in the Stern Review of Climate Change, and he estimated it's going to cost the world $60 trillion over 100 years. But, you know, you can't believe anything that economists say, but it will cost a lot anyway. The figure is very, very high. And most recent work, this is work done this last summer, has shown that this source of methane is over a bigger area than we thought. The Norwegians have gone into the western part of the Arctic, the Kara Sea, and found methane plumes there. And the Swedes worked in the Laptev Sea, that's halfway round, and found methane plumes in the Laptev Sea. And in fact, they described them as an Arctic methane megaflare. So instead of just the East Siberian Sea, we're seeing these methane emissions all around the shallow waters of the Arctic, the East Siberian Sea, the Laptev Sea, and the Kara Sea. So the area is bigger than we thought. So we really have to worry about that. And longer term, you have to worry about methane emitted from permafrost on land, because the permafrost on land is also melting, but more slowly, and that's releasing methane. So over a long period, you'll get increased methane emissions from all the tundra which has permafrost at the moment. And we've seen rises in temperature of permafrost wherever we look. So methane is a real threat, and it's an immediate threat. We have to keep going up there every year to see how much the methane plumes are increasing. Finally, in the tale of woe, there's the problem of food. What seems to be happening is there's a link between the retreat of sea ice and extreme weather events. And this is, the newspapers have been full of this sort of thing, that we've been getting weird winter weather in Europe and North America, and it's associated with the retreat of sea ice. The reason is that you're warming the Arctic, and that's changing the position of the jet stream. The jet stream is the boundary between Arctic air masses and lower latitude air masses, and it has big loops in it. If the Arctic's warming up, which it is, and the tropics are not warming up so fast, then the temperature difference between the Arctic and the tropics is decreasing. So the Earth is losing part of this temperature gradient between the Arctic and the tropics, and that's causing winds to slow down. So as the jet stream slows down, it adopts bigger loops because it's not moving so fast. And the bigger loops mean that Arctic air can come down into North America, can come down into Europe, while tropical air can move up into places that it never used to be, the Midwest of America and other parts of the world. So the bigger loops on the jet stream mean that some parts of the world get more extreme cold weather in winter, and other parts get more extreme warm weather. So the parts that get more extreme cold weather, say, the people there say, well, global warming isn't happening because we're getting colder weather. But in fact, as a whole, the planet's getting warmer weather, but it's just distributed in a new way. And the trouble is, those big loops that are changing the masses of air that different countries are getting, unfortunately, they interact with all the best crop-producing areas of the world. So these are the areas of croplands which have the highest productivity, and we can see it's a mid-latitude range through North America, Europe, into Russia. There's a lot of crops there which are affected by the jet stream, which is looping along up here, changing its pattern, and those crops are threatened. Not only do we get serious impacts from the ice retreat causing these jet stream to change, but in the long run, we'll get a reduction in production from crops just because of warming. And one of the reasons why politicians say we mustn't let temperatures rise beyond 2 degrees is that as soon as you get more warming up to 3 or 4 degrees, the productivity of the major food crops in the world goes down. Some of them go up because you're getting more CO2 encourages growth. So for a little while, we actually get more food production from rice and wheat. But once it gets warmer than that, it goes down rapidly. And 4 degrees is what at the moment is predicted for the end of the century. So by the end of the century, we'll have several tens of percent less production of the main food crops. And that's at a time when the global population is increasing very fast. So the collision between global population increase and global food production decrease, once you get beyond 2 degrees, is a very serious one. I mean, it's one where a lot of people will starve, billions of people will starve. So it's very, very serious that we should not allow global temperatures to rise beyond 2 degrees. It's not just an arbitrary figure pulled out of thin air. It is the figure that determines whether crop production goes up or goes down. So already we're getting global drought occurring more frequently than in the past. And the price of food is already going up. The final, a happy note, our warming is being reduced by an effect which is also due to sea ice retreating. There's a very slow circulation in the world ocean called the thermohaline circulation. It's not related to winds, it's related to temperatures and evaporation. And it's got a section in the northern Atlantic which is bringing heat in the Gulf Stream up from the tropical Atlantic to Europe, making us warmer than we would otherwise be. So we're about 5 to 10 degrees warmer than we ought to be. And part of what drove that circulation was that water coming up to the high latitudes sank down to the seabed in a place in the middle of the Greenland Sea called the Odden Ice Tongue. And that was due to the ice cover in the Greenland Sea, the Arctic ice cover coming down the east coast of Greenland, turning around and forming an area of, because of currents, forming an area of cold water where ice was forming. And as the ice formed, salt that was in the ocean didn't get incorporated into the ice, but just went back into the ocean, increased the salinity of the ocean. The ocean got more, water got more dense, and it sank. And it sank in a really interesting way, which we were studying until we ran out of research funds, called chimneys, which were the surface water was sinking down to 2,500 meters of the ocean down towards the seabed in the form of a kind of cylinder, rotating cylinder of sinking water. And you were getting those in this area called the Odden in the middle of the Greenland Sea. And we were studying that and finding this was what was driving this thermohaline circulation. But then suddenly the Odden stopped being there because of global warming. The Odden ice tongue doesn't form anymore. And so the chimneys are not forming. And the result, according to modellers, is going to be this. By the end of the century, the warming of most of continental Europe, including Italy, will be about 4 degrees, and that's going to be disastrous for crops and a lot of things with life are going to be much harder. It's going to be a bit like North Africa. So most of continental Europe is going to warm by about 4 degrees by the end of the century. But this effect on the thermohaline circulation of the chimneys not forming anymore will keep the Atlantic cooler, and that will limit the warming for countries like Britain, Iceland, Western France, Holland, Norway, and they will only get about 2 to 3 degrees. So it's still quite serious, but of course the price is that the tropical ocean will warm more rapidly, so you have a lot more and worse hurricanes in the south. So there we are. It's mainly a very bad story. And what's happening is that global warming driven by CO2 is doing all these things to the planet. The Arctic is making things worse because the Arctic amplification of warming means that Arctic sea ice is retreating faster. And then all that open water that used to be ice covered is having all these impacts on global sea level rise, on global albedo, and on methane emissions. So it's the villain is us by putting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, but the impact is done via the Arctic. The Arctic's getting the most warming, and then it's doing all these other things to the planet. So what do we do? And of course, we should be stopping emitting carbon dioxide, but there's no sign that people are going to do that. And these are things that might put a kind of sticking plaster on global warming for a while. And it's techniques called geoengineering, which have been proposed, but we don't know if they'll work. And they consist of either going up into the upper atmosphere and deliberately putting powder into the stratosphere to reflect solar radiation. So you have to keep flying up there with high-flying aircraft, releasing this powdered material into the upper atmosphere. Or there's another method that's been proposed of called cloud brightening, where you take the grey, miserable clouds that are typical of Britain, for instance, and you spray very fine water vapour into them through vertical columns, and that whitens them and increases their albedo to offset global warming. So there are technical methods that would slow down global warming, but in the long run, we have to stop emitting carbon dioxide, which means changing the way we live. And the question is, can we do that fast enough? Can we get geoengineering methods that will work quickly enough to offset global warming before we get to some catastrophic level? That's the challenge that we face, which is partly coming from the Arctic. And so that's why the Arctic is important.
That was part two of a one-hour talk by Professor Peter Wadams on Arctic amplification, climate change, global warming, new challenges from the top of the world. He spoke in Milano, Italy, on May 29, 2015. Peter Wadams is the UK's most experienced sea ice scientist. He has made more than 50 expeditions to both polar regions, working from ice camps, icebreakers, and aircraft. He made 6 submerged voyages to the North Pole on Royal Navy submarines. Wadham's research group in Cambridge has been the only UK group with the capacity to carry out field work on sea ice. Come to TUC Radio's website for more information. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio's free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Time of useful consciousness is an aeronautical term. It's the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. Time to rescue the planet and the plane. My name is Maria Gloden. Thank you for listening. Thank you.